The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Now, Louise Lennox, chef and children's feed therapist from Fussy Eating Kids, joins us now. Louise, great to have you with us. How big an issue is fussy eating among kids?
It's huge, actually. And I think it's bigger than people realise, because the actual... it's only been kind of researched in the last 20 to 25 years. But like one in three children, and this is globally, a lot of people think it's westernized, it's actually globalized, would be deemed a picky or a fussy eater.
Give us that, what percentage again?
One in three children.
One in three?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so out of that, half will grow out of it in time, but the other half won't. And they might need additional help to help them learn how to eat, because eating is a learned skill. When I heard that, it blew my mind.
So what kind of help? How do you help somebody who's a fussy eater if they don't like rhubarb?
I was about to say, you're probably going to say vegetables or fruit, because that's what we focus on. Yeah. Well, my son, how I got into all of this was my son stopped eating. And I thought, me being a chef and doing all these food shows and, you know, being professionally trained with diplomas, my child would eat. And when he didn't eat, I kind of, you know, the way you know, you're kind of going, I did everything by the book. Breastfed, yeah. Everything was pureed, but why isn't my child eating?
Did you quit? You questioned yourself, like all parents do.
I blamed myself.
Right.
Yeah, I felt so much guilt, embarrassed, judgment, because my kid wasn't eating all these foods I knew he should eat. And he was getting really, really sick. And when I say sick, he'd chronic constipation. We put him on medication for that. He'd really bad, he'd wake up during the night, really bad stomach cramps. His whole little demeanour changed. And my breaking point was when he... was running outside. He had this little pair of blue jeans on him and they fell down around his waist because he was losing so much weight. And then my doctor said, we need a medical intervention because he was actually shrinking before my eyes. And I couldn't force him to eat. Like, you cannot, like, no. This is the three things. Anyone that is a parent, I think, understands the three things you cannot force a kid to do is sleep. We all know that. Go to the toilet and actually eat. But we don't understand that eating is a learned skill the same way walking, talking, or learning to swim is.
Okay, I'm guessing there are thousands of people listening to this today.
Yeah.
They're going, oh my God, that is my kid. So what do they do in that scenario?
The most important thing to do is to try and figure out why they have a challenge with eating. And it's huge. There's not one nuance. And like when I work with parents, a lot of them think, oh, my child's being defined, because you would think that, and that's understandable. Or it's a phase. And what happens is, if you can find and figure out why your child is having challenges eating, it can be medical, it could be oral motor. A lot of the time there could be sensory. What we're seeing a lot more now as a mom of a neurodivergent child with ADHD, autism, a lot of children would find the textures challenging. So 75% of children with autism, for example, actually have sensory processing. I don't like the word. I like differences rather than disorder. And so textures are going to be hard. Smells are going to be hard. Even the appearance of food. One parent I was working with, like, her child couldn't even sit at the table and turn and face the food because the appearance of food was really off-putting. So to figure out where your child's eating and has gotten like interrupted, that's because until you know the why, then you know how to help them. And when we talk about helping, we always focus at the end goal of they just eat the food, but we don't actually see there's a whole process beforehand. And the best way I can describe it is, you wouldn't eat something unless you could actually, if you wouldn't touch it with your fingers, you wouldn't put it in your mouth. And there's so much to breaking down textures by actually being able to touch it. But we don't naturally go to our kids, hey, touch all the food, kids, it's okay, because it freaks us out.
Yeah. So in terms of the practicalities of it, when you are, if you have a fussy eater, you tend to have to cook a separate meal.
That's really stressful.
Else. And it's a lot of work.
Look, my background being a chef, worked on like a super popular show, The Restaurant. I dreaded the word, what is for dinner, for my son. Hated it. And I thought food that once brought me joy, I actually fell out of love with cooking. And I don't say that lightly, because me being a dyslexic kid, a lot of my identity was in food. And now it was actually tearing my family apart. So the first thing to do to, like, when you say cooking like dinners for everyone, is you need to build trust. If your child, if at home anyone here goes, "My God, my child's a picky eater, I don't know how to figure it out yet," the first thing you can do is build trust. If we trust, if a child trusts that they're not going to be forced to eat a food they don't feel ready yet to, they're going to feel a little bit calmer. And when I say trust, like when kids like me, I make eye contact with foods, because we normally go, "Woohoo, they're going to eat the food." But like, so kids need to know that they always have to have one food they're guaranteed to like. And when you're menu planning, I actually go, "What do I want to eat for the week? What does my diary look like?" I actually don't start off with the meal. I start off with going, you know, "How busy is my day? I knew I was coming to studio today." So I was like, "Right, it's going to be curry and rice. It's going to be pre-made. It's in the fridge."
Sounds
later
great.
On. Yeah, my son burns everything, or my husband burns it. My kids actually get worried when they hear he's cooking dinner, because like he is like dangerous. And I bought an air fryer for him. Seriously, just so he could cook, like, you know, the frozen stuff, and he even burns that. Like, he's consistent with his burning. Like, but the good thing between our marriage is, because I am a good cook, he, even if I make him toast, he's so grateful, like it's a Michelin star food. Seriously.
Here, lots of text coming through in this. My experience has been kids don't like the foods that are so-called healthy foods.
So when we talk about healthy food, like there's so much about how we communicate to kids around eating. I actually don't call food healthy or unhealthy. There's a lot of judgment around food. And what children start grouping in their own little groups is they go, "Mom or dad, whoever's trying to get me to eat vegetables." Vegetables are really hard because the textures are very up and down. Hard raw fruit and vegetables is really hard from an actual oral motor process to actually chew down and bite. So kids will just go, "Ugh, healthy food's disgusting. I like these preferred foods. I'll stick with these." So they group a lot. Like they'll even kind of group foods by going, "All green food is bitter." And we want to try and change that persona. So I actually don't say it's good or bad. Food is just food, because when we take away certain foods from our kids, kids actually focus on that more. So at dinner time, you always make sure that there is guaranteed one food that they're going to like. It's called safe food, but then they need exposure. So when you pre-plate food, all your child's going to do is look at their little bit of food. I call it the invisible wall, because the delicious food you're making yourself, it's a pad thai or whatever you're having, they don't cross like the invisible border. And for exposure, so we want to try and allow our kids to see the food even before they eat it and to become familiar. But when we don't allow them to kind of actually see the food in general, they actually will stay with their restricted amount. And the danger there is, this happened to Alex, is when they eat the same foods on repeat, at some stage they'll burn out of them. It's called food jagging. And then you lose those foods and then those are gone. It's like the food funnel gets smaller and smaller.
Okay. Just in terms of other practical things, batching, I have to say, I can't do batching.
I hate batch cooking.
Yeah, that's okay. I agree. Like, it takes me enough to cook one dinner.
And do you know what as well about batch cooking? I also wonder, so just when I was coming in on the Lewis Day, I wonder, do people do it as much as they used to because food costs are so expensive? And, you know, doing a general shop nowadays is a lot more than years ago. Are we batching as much? It's actually just a query. I don't know the answer to that. But then a lot of them are like in sauces, and sauces and mixed textures for children is actually really hard for some kids to actually enjoy. So if you're trying to batch cook and you're like, "But my kid doesn't like sauces," then you're going, "Well, what next?"
Okay. Life's a batch. What's your final tip? Here's actually just a quick text. "My son won't eat meat, nothing. He's 4. How do I get him to start even eating chicken? It's a texture thing, it seems. I've tried covering in gravy, etc. It's a no-go. Texture seems to be
so
key,
Alex,
doesn't it?"
Yeah, the first food that I noticed Alex going off was chicken. In a chicken curry, he pulled it out in these little shreds and I'll never forget it. So chicken was one of my focus foods. I wanted to try and help him relearn how to like. So with meats, they're very fibrous, and a lot of the time we overcook meat for kids, so the texture gets drier. And then with chicken particularly, when it's like, you know, when it's covered, because people go, "Oh, they're like so into like nuggets or they're into like goujons." Alex didn't eat any of those, but if they do, they might like the crunch of those, or we call them pre-chewed up meats, because there's not much chewing in them. But you actually need a huge amount of like oral motor, like skills, to actually bite down and chew. So if you're trying to help your child, your 4-year-old, like chicken, what I would first say is actually reintroduce it by allowing them to see it and like break it down in their fingers and chop it into tiny bits, because masking it in gravy, if they like gravy, that can help. But again, it's building trust. If you suddenly, you know, hide in the gravy and then your kid's like, "Oh, look at that chicken in there, I don't like that," then they'll go off it. So you need to slowly reintegrate that. It's like the clinical word for it is systematic desensitization. It's how you get kids over, okay, or people over any kind of phobia. phobias. There's a lot in there.
Chef Al has got in touch to say, oh my God, are you watching me through my phone? I'm literally cooking three meals for fussy kids. Do you know what? I think we might need to come back to this because
it's a huge subject.
Yeah. We might come back to it in a couple of weeks' time if you're available. But look, thanks a million for the advice you have given. Louise Lennox there, chef and children's feed therapist from Fussy Eating Kids.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.